Good morning and welcome to Step Into the Light. We're your hosts. I'm Patty Sheen.
And I'm Jeanelle Fury. Thank you for listening.
Together, we will introduce you to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light.
And those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Our guest today is Dr. Richard Dew. He has been a family physician in East Tennessee for 50 years. Although retired, he currently volunteers as the medical director for a faith-based clinic for the uninsured in Sevierville. Dr. Dew has lectured on coping with grief and loss in medical schools and spoken to numerous professional groups and churches. Following the murder of his 21-year-old son, he became active in the Compassionate Friends, an international support group for families whose children have died. He is the author of 4 books, his most recent, When Sorrow Comes. Dr. Dew and his wife reside in Knoxville, Tennessee. Good morning, Dr. Dew. Thank you for being with us. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Good morning, Dr. Dew. This is Patty, and it's a pure delight to have you here with us, sir. We are so honored to have you on the show this morning. I would like to start us right off with the question about the Compassionate Friends. You support this group. It was started in the late 1960s. Would you tell us about that organization, the importance of their work, and your involvement with them?
The Compassionate Friends is an international support group that was begun in England back in the 60s. It's for families, not just the parents, but the siblings also and anyone else in the family, but for families who have lost children. There are approximately 600 chapters of the Compassionate Friends in the United States. There also is another organization that's a spinoff from the Compassionate Friends called Bereaved Parents USA. You can find both of these on the internet. It does exactly the same thing, and they have over 250 chapters. So there are over 850 chapters of organizations to deal with for families who have lost children to have some outlet to try to get some healing.
In addition to emotional support, I wonder, Doctor, do they provide any kind of, how could I say it? Like if you have a person that's got financial issues or something like that, do they step in with assistance with that at all or no?
No, they're very hand-to-mouth operation. We're always raising funds. They do have a lot of chat rooms and things where people can talk with others if they can't get to a meeting. They have lots of over-the-air type things on the internet. So there are places to make contact. If you go to their website, they will tell you where the nearest chapter to you is.
Very good.
How do you participate with them, Doctor? What is your involvement?
Well, I've been the local chapter leader here in the Knoxville, Tennessee area for the last 25 years. And I have been on their national board and worked with them there. And I've given 40 or 50 workshops at their national conferences.
Excellent. Yeah, and thank you for offering that. I could tell from the reading that you were very involved with them. I just couldn't tell at what level and what degree. So I recently read your book, When Sorrow Comes, and was very impressed with how thoroughly and succinctly you cover the topic of grief, as well as the suggestions you offer. This book is very consumable, if I may put it that way, and I recommend it to anyone going through a process of grief. Chapter 2 is about God and grief and the problem of why. Will you speak to us a bit about that?
Yeah, that's one of the things I see at the Compassionate Friends is the first question everybody asks is why. And but they don't really think about, well, why what? And I think there are probably 3 whys that we all deal with. The first one is, why did this happen? Why in the scheme of the universe or why in God's plan did this happen? I ask that question. And I dealt with it for maybe a week, and then I decided I'm never going to get an answer to this question. You're not. The second why is, well, why me? I think that most of us think that if we are good people and we go to church and we treat others kindly and we tithe and we do all the good things we're supposed to do, we won't say this, but I think we really think, well, somehow God's going to give us special attention and look out for us and ours. And then when something like this happens, your son is murdered, you wonder, whoa, why me? What did I do? They always say, you hear people saying all the time, well, that's not fair. Well, you know, bad things happen. And we never get an answer to why me either. And then the third why is also not answerable. I made an attempt in the book to do it, but it made me feel better. But it's why is there pain and suffering and death and evil in the universe in the first place? And people have been trying to answer that since time began and never have come up with any good answers. But, you know, I think there were some that I found helpful with that one. And I discussed that in the book. And so you don't get an answer to that one either. You ask all these whys and they just eat at you and you never get a good answer. And finally, what I came up with is maybe we're asking the wrong question. You're not going to get an answer to why, but maybe what we should be asking is what now? Given the fact that this horrible thing has happened, what am I going to do? What am I going to do with it? And if you take that approach, you can bring positive things out of these horrible things if you're willing to do it.
To do, I would like to ask you if I could, were you, we often ask our guests when they first come on the air about their Christian background, were you well grounded in your Christian faith at the time you lost your son? Because some people do not become Christians until later on in life.
No, I grew up in church. My first memories of going to church. My family is riddled with ministers. I'm not one of them, but I grew up in a church where we were active in church. I've met my wife in church, and you know, our boys, we were regular attendees and active in our churches. So yes, I had a pretty traditional Protestant upbringing.
Okay, I just wondered, because many of our guests have expressed how they grew up in church, went to church with their family, but then their faith was never discussed in the home, so they really didn't have any grounding in the basic concepts of Christianity until way later in life. And yet others say, yeah, I knew what it was all about from the time I was 7 or whatever. So I just wondered, because I personally think that a person's faith makes a considerable amount of difference in the way that they handle life in general. And Gene and I and others have discussed this, that how in the world do people that have absolutely no faith even survive?
I've wondered that too.
Circumstances like you have dealt with. So, well, Dr. Du, in your book, you offer a variety of different outlets for a person to help themselves through their grief. Could you share a few of your suggestions with us here on Step Into the Light today?
Yeah, probably the first thing that my wife and I did is, we were devastated by this and weren't thinking real clearly. But the first thing we did is we prayed and made a pledge that with God's help, we will not let this destroy our life or our marriage. And that was the first decision that we made, and we made a pledge. And it was tried a lot of times, but we were able to hold that as we went through. The next thing that was helpful for us was about 2 weeks after Brad was killed, we received a letter from a person we'd never heard of. It was a lady in Knoxville whose son had been murdered also. And she said, I've been going to the Compassionate Friends, and you might want to consider it. And we did. And we went with the intent of, well, maybe this will help. And we're still working there 25 years later. But that was the two of the major things. Our faith and the Compassionate Friends really helped us a lot. There were several other things that I think that helped us through our grief. One was just reading. I had never had any real training in grief, and so I read everything I could find about grief and learned about this. I had never heard of the stages of grief until I was going through them. And reading can be really, really helpful. That's why I wrote the book, to be real honest. And one thing you might want to mention to people, there is a website, and I'll come back to it. It slipped my mind. But they deal only in grief literature, and it's really, really a helpful website. I found that writing was really, really helpful. Many people will sit down and start writing and keep a journal. And this is really helpful to get the thoughts out of you and down on paper. I started writing poems for some odd reason, and I may mention that a little bit later as we go along. The other thing I found that was really helpful was trying to bring some meaning to this. When these things happen, we want them to have some meaning. We want something worthwhile to come from them, even though they're horrible. And so I started trying consciously to find what can I do in Brad's memory that will bring some meaning to his death. He's not going to be able to do the things he would have done. So what can I do for him?
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of things did you discover? Was this something, too, that you worked on with your wife, or did you both take very different routes in your healing?
We walked together a lot, but basically we operated differently. I read and wrote. She was having a horrible time staying in our home. She said just too many memories there, and the town we lived in was not that large, and she was hesitant to go out into town where people recognized her as the murdered boy's mother. So she was going to a mall and just sitting every day, and this was one of those God-sent things that happened. Is I was praying every day, help us do something to help Jean, and out of the blue, a friend who owned a cabin up in the Smoky Mountains about 6 months later called and said, you know, would you like to buy my cabin? And, and I said, yes. And so my wife started going. She would leave on Thursday afternoon and come back on Sunday evening. And she would go up and stay at the cabin by herself in the mountains. She read in the paper and found a group that was hiking in the mountains. And so she hiked with them every week. She would go on these long hikes. And while she was there, she could just sit and lick her wounds and do her healing by herself. She was around people who just recognized her as Jean Dew from Knoxville, not Jean Dew, the murdered boy's mother. And so And so she did most of her healing up there. I did it at home reading and writing and working, you know, with the Compassionate Friends. She went to Compassionate Friends, but she didn't take a leadership role. And after I'd been there for about a year and a half, they asked me to be their leader, and I've pretty much been that since then.
I think it's important that people realize that no matter how hard you try and go through something together, sometimes you just have to express it and experiencing it. However it is that it's going to work for you. And what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another.
And particularly husbands and wives, they do it differently.
Sure.
Guys, you know, guys want to do things. We're fixers, and I want to fix it. And I kept trying to fix Jean, and that was very grating on her. many times the female wants to talk. Women communicate a lot more than men do. You know, listen to men talk, and they talk about sports, the weather, and politics. but they don't share much personal. Women share personally. Fortunately, Jean and I were able to do that, but that's not usually the case. And then a lot of times, you know, one person wants to go to the cemetery and the other one doesn't. One cries a lot,
sure,
and one doesn't. And you know, the other one thinks, well, they're doing it wrong. But they're
mm-hmm.
not doing it wrong. They're doing what gets them through the best.
Right.
I'm so glad you brought that up at all, Dr. Dew, to expand, because it is huge when a husband and wife make that commitment. I know a lady who, very dear friend of mine, who I met long after her husband had passed away, but they had experienced the loss of a child. I don't recall if it was through an auto accident or through an illness or what, but that tore apart their marriage. They eventually got back together and married, which I don't know if that happens very often, but the point is, I'm so glad that you did bring that up, how important it is for a husband and wife to commit to their relationship first off. And I just wanted to thank you for bringing that out to our listeners.
Let me mention one other thing. It's an urban myth that 80% of marriages end in divorce after the death of a child. And that is absolutely not true. That came from a study of a grief counselor with 14 cases. And she published it. And that, if you go take any Psych 101 course, that'll be given as fact. We kept hearing that. And when I was on the board of Compassion Friends, I convinced them, and we did a huge study. We had, I don't know if it was Gallup, but something similar to Gallup, polled 25,000 families who had lost children. And lo and behold, the divorce rate for this group was slightly less than for the general population, not 80%.
Good. Yeah, that's encouraging. So, Dr. Dew, for someone on the outside of the grieving experience wanting to help, what is something someone should not do when trying to help a grieving friend or loved one?
Probably, the first thing they should not do is they should not abandon them. A lot of times people don't know what they should say or should do, so they don't do anything. And the person
mm-hmm.
who's going through grief is left there all by themselves. So the first thing to do is don't abandon them. Secondly, don't give them unasked for advice. We find that this is one of the biggest complaints I hear at Compassionate Friends meeting, is everybody knows what a grieving person should do, whether they've been through grief or not, but they know what you should do. And one
mm-hmm.
lady came into one of our meetings and said, you know, people just should all over me. So don't tell them what they should do. And I would be real careful about theology. I'm a believer. I think God works with us in our grief. However, poorly quoted scripture at the wrong time can do more harm than good. I'd usually leave it up to the person to bring up what they want to talk about, if they want to talk about their faith. And if there's something pertinent, I may share mine. But I'd be careful about, this is not a real good time for theologic discussions. And then there's lots of things that one of the biggest complaints I hear from people with lost children, lost anyone, is what people say. And they really mean to say the right thing, but with the best of intentions, they say things that really hurt. And, you know, getting into the theology type is, it's so easy to say, well, it was God's will. Well, you're going to have a hard time convincing a young mother that it was God's will to kill her, have a drunk driver kill the husband, the father of her two children, and that God never gives us more than we can bear. I don't think he does, but it doesn't seem like it at the time, and it sure doesn't help an outsider to come tell me that. So you need to be careful about those type things. Be careful about feel-good cliches. You know, you're not your old self, or when are you going to get back to normal? They're going to do it whenever they can. But it doesn't help for us to try to rush them along. And particularly with bereaved parents, anything that implies forgetting, don't say. People like to use the word closure. And if you want to enrage a bereaved parent, talk about having closure. Closure is for real estate deals, not for dealing with a lost child. be careful about saying I know just how you feel. I've never heard that said at a Compassionate Friends meeting. It's really interesting if anybody should, but they never say that to each other. Be careful about saying at least this, at least that, because it comes across to the bereaved as minimizing it. And the one thing that people said to me over and over again was, life goes on. I have no idea what that means. And I know that it really irritated me that, yeah, life did. Everybody was going on with their life, and mine, it was going down the tubes. So be careful about what you say. And what you say, well, golly, I'm afraid to say anything. Best thing to say is, I'm sorry. Just say, I'm so sorry. You can say, I can't imagine how you must feel. It's really helpful sometimes to say, I really miss whoever the person was, and then tell them what it is that you miss, or I remember when, and tell them a little interesting incident. These things help, but all the others are trying to fix something, and you can't fix the unfixable.
Great advice. Thank you.
That's all excellent advice, Dr. Dew. And I'd also like to mention that, excuse me, when my husband passed away, this has been going on 5 years now, and I became involved in a hospice support group. It just so happened that after I lost my husband, I had a couple of friends who also lost their husbands. And when I would express my sympathy to them, they would say to me, well, you know what it's like, or you know how I feel. And I would tell them, I really don't, because I was not in your relationship. I was in my relationship. I know how I feel. You know, I don't know how you feel losing John. I just know how I feel having lost Manuel, you know. And I think that's very important, that everybody has to be granted that right to own their own feelings and to live their own experience. And I'd also like to mention, Dr. Dew, we were discussing this a little bit earlier, and we may get into this more, but when I talk about my closing and I say things are not quite as dark as they seemed at the time, well, that may not be true, and we might get into that a little more when we address another question down the line here. But right now we're going to go to a little break, and at this time I like to remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light right here on Blog Talk Radio. Your hosts are Patty Sheen and Jean Alfieri. Our guest today is Dr. Richard Dew. Dr. Dew has been a physician for many years in Tennessee, but he is speaking to us today about a very personal issue that happened to him. He had a son who was murdered at the age of 21. He has written a book entitled When Sorrow Comes. Dr. Dew has shared with us many of the aspects of grief and how to help grieving people through that process, and he's been just wonderful with all that he has shared so far, and I know that he's going to share more. He can be found on his website at rdubooks.com, also on Facebook, and those of you who have listened to the show in the past know that I refer folks to my website, which is pattysheen.com. That is spelled PATTISHENE. If you would like to listen to the show again, or hopefully refer it to friends and family, you go to that website. At the very top of the page is the Blog Talk Radio tab. Click on that. You will find the link to all of our shows. And under each show is the More Information tab, and that will take you to Dr. Dew's links so that you can learn a little bit more about him. Also, I would like to give a shout out for a dear friend of mine. He's the one who got me started in podcasting. He has been promoting my podcast, and I would like to do the same in kind and promote his. The name of his podcast is The Right Answer, totally different from mine. He is under the politics category on Blog Talk Radio. It's him and two of his family members, and the three guys just trying to sit around and talk about the political issues of the day. They try to look at things from all sides. So if you have an interest in that kind of thing, I would recommend that you go to therightanswer.webnode.com. That is their website, and that will link you to the podcast. So just wanted to give a shout out for them, because like I said, they did the same for me on their podcast. So wanted to thank them for that. But Dr. Dew, getting back to our discussion here, the book we are discussing, When Sorrow Comes, was written because of a very dark period in your life. And can you tell us a little bit more in depth, if you would, about what happened, how you were able to find your way out of this darkness? And as we discussed before the show, maybe you really, that darkness is always going to be there. So would you address that issue for us?
Yes, there were three or four things that helped me. The first one was I read my Bible through twice immediately, and I underlined and read everything that had anything to do with what I thought was my situation. And sort of interesting is Job and Psalms are practically all read, but it's helpful to find these people who had the same problems you were having and the same doubts you were having and how they resolved those. So I found that helpful, and I found there were several scriptures that I found really helpful. And the first one was, I just stumbled on this the little verse in Jeremiah, "I know the plans I have for you, plans to help you, not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." And at that time, I had that there's no hope for a future, and I had no hope, and I had no thought I had no future. But this sort of told me there is some light at the end of the tunnel. You just stick it out. And that fit in with the resolve we made when we first started that we're going to get through this. The other thing was prayer, and prayer has never been my strong point. But I prayed like I'd never prayed before here, and I never really doubted God. I never got angry with God. The primary thing I doubted was what I thought I believed. Was it true? Was it accurate or not? And it was getting back to this thing I was talking about. Well, why did this bad thing happen to me? Maybe it was something wrong with what I believed. And so I prayed over and over again, just give me one sign that any of this, of what I believe, is true, and it'll all hold together. And I prayed that over and over again. At the time Brad was killed, I was caring for my father, who lived right down below my house, and he had an accelerated case of Lou Gehrig's disease and was paralyzed from his chest down. And I was taking care of him. One night my mother called and said, Phil can't swallow, and we knew that was coming. And so I told him, when I get home from the hospital, I come by, and I stop by, and we talk with him. And he indeed couldn't swallow. And that's one of the last stages before they gradually either starve to death, dehydrate, or smother. And so we had a discussion about these things. And I went up to my house, and I knelt down, and I prayed at that point. I said, I know Dad isn't going to live, but let him go quickly, and don't let him hurt. And immediately after I said amen, my phone rang, and it was my mother that said, Phil, just quit breathing. And that's all I could do was say, thank you. I don't need any more signs. That was the nearest to a miracle I've ever seen. First time I've ever seen a prayer answers instantaneously. But to me, you know, it's God saying, look, quit worrying about all these things. I'm with you. I'm going to stick with you. And so from that point on, I had no doubts about what I believed. Is I have refined what I believe, but basically it all held up. So that was one of the major things. And then the other thing that helped get me through was all of the things that the odd coincidences that were just too much to be a coincidence. God works. I think, you know, we talk about random acts of kindness. I think that's the Holy Spirit saying, you need to go do this, you need to go do that. And so many things were done for me that at the time I didn't recognize it. But finding the house for Gene, that came from totally outside me. I mentioned I was writing poetry. I had never written a poem in my life, and I started writing poems. Eventually, I put them down in a book, published it. It's sold over 6,000 copies now, and I have letters from people all over the country who said, this really, really helped me. Those poems didn't come from me. They came from beyond me. So I think that God usually works through other people to accomplish what he wants done. We're his hands and feet, and so many things happened that just were too much to be coincidences. So those are the major things that got me through.
Those are wonderful examples, too. I really appreciate the perspective. And I appreciate, too, that it takes a long time to gain that perspective. At what point, Dr. Du, were you able to realize that, hey, things are happening here? As you describe, you know, your prayer was answered. Did that kind of open the door to seeing things, or was it piece by piece?
It was piece by piece, but that was once that had happened, and then it basically is like God was saying, look, I've been here all the time. You just were so busy raving and ranting and grieving that you didn't know I was here, and I am.
Sure.
And so knowing that, it still took. I did some research for an article I wrote for a medical journal about how long grief takes. And generally, it takes about a year to adapt to the loss of an older parent, 2 to 3 years to adapt to the loss of a spouse, and 5 to 6 years to adapt to the loss of a child. And,
wow.
and these proved fairly true. It was about 2 years, 2.5 years down the road for me. And part of it had to do is we had to go through 2 trials, and you really can't kind of polish things off until you get that over with.
Sure. Well, and I appreciate that. That's comforting, actually, for me. And I didn't know there were statistics like that. Of course, there's statistics about everything, so it would make sense. I know after my mother passed away and she died of cancer, that it was over a year, and I found comfort in writing as well. It was well over a year, and I was still writing, and when I would write about her, I'd start crying, and I'm like, well, I still miss her. You know, I mean, it wasn't, it bothered me that I would still have that strong of an emotion, because, you know, you look at yourself and go, come on, have you moved past this yet? And the answer is no. And I'm like, well, okay, then that's the answer. The answer is no, I haven't moved past it. And as you had said before, you know, you have to be accepting of that for yourself as well. Dr. Du, you dedicate an entire chapter addressing special circumstances. Tell us a bit about this and why you broke it out into its own section.
Well, as practically all grief is almost generic. Most people go through the same thoughts, and if you want to deal with the stages of grief, we all go through them. And what you can do to help one usually will help with another. But there are some of them that are more difficult, and there are 4 that I run across all the time in my practice and with the compassionate friends, and that is the loss of a child, and particularly even an early loss, a perinatal death or stillborn or miscarriage, homicide, suicide, and addiction and overdose. And these have their own special problems that makes it much more difficult to get through these than it does some of the others. You know, I give talks to a lot of women's groups, and I'll usually ask, how many people here have had a miscarriage? And usually there'll be quite a few hands raised up. And my next question is, how many of you ever received a sympathy card? Most of the hands go down. Is the early loss of a child is almost totally discounted. We don't, and maybe people don't understand the loss, but these people feel totally abandoned. And with the loss of a child, children are supposed to bury their parents. Parents are not supposed to bury their children. So out of the normal circle of light, it's just almost disconcerting. And so there's special things dealing with the loss of a child. With a homicide, there are 2 or 3 things that you run across with a homicide. The first thing is that the homicide is intentional. Someone intended for this person to die. The other thing, and it basically is with all three of these last ones, the homicide, suicide, and overdose, is if a loss is sudden, or if it's unexpected, or if it's violent, the grief process is significantly prolonged. And all three of these have all three of these factors active there. With homicides, the other thing is that you got the criminal justice system, and you never get the outcome that you want. People almost always put their grief on hold until they get through all of the legal proceedings. And that it took 2 years to get through the two trials that we had. We've since been through 12 parole hearings, which just brings it up and you scrape the scab off and have to go through it all over again. So that's something that you don't deal with other kinds of loss. With suicides and addictions are very similar, and the worst thing about those is they're sort of stigmatized. People think that when someone dies by suicide that they were weak and they chose that was a choice they made. That's really not the case. With addiction, well, they were bad, and that was a choice they made. The thing they don't realize is both of these are illnesses. Depression is an illness, and it has a higher mortality rate than many cancers. Addiction also has a high mortality rate from overdoses. So these things have to be dealt with, but no one ever thinks about it, and so they tend to just ignore people with these. They don't understand what's happening, and the thing is they don't accept it as being an illness. But it's interesting, you know, people you say, well, they committed suicide. You never say someone committed a heart attack or committed cancer or committed leukemia. It's much kinder and more accurate to say they died by suicide, not that they committed suicide. And the same thing with addiction. These people have an illness that actually has horrible recovery rate. Only about 15 to 20% of people ever get totally over their or get control of their addiction. So these are things that they have to deal with that you don't have to deal with others. And because of this, homicides, people are afraid to talk about it. Suicides and overdoses, they are afraid to talk about. So these people are left pretty much by themselves. And one of the major things that helps in trying to get through this loss is talking your way through it. You generally talk your way through grief. You need to have a cadre of friends or someone you can talk to. That's what the support group does. It gives you someone to talk and get these things out. And you don't have anybody to talk with. You're left there all by yourself. So these are tougher to deal with a lot of times than other losses are.
Well, Dr. Du, thank you so much for sharing that. And did you know the perpetrator of the crime against your son?
No, basically they had decided they were going to kill the next person who came down the street. And it was Brad going home from work. They had never seen him. He had never seen them. It was just two bad people decided to do a really bad thing. And one of the other things, just in passing, is particularly with homicide, when I finally got around to where I could start giving some talks, the first question everybody asked me, in fact, someone asked me this 2 weeks after Brad was killed, well, have you forgiven them? And the answer, you know, you hate to say no, but the answer was no. I said, well, I don't hate them anymore. That was the best I could do. And eventually I came around to forgiveness, but it took a long, long time.
I just cannot begin to imagine the kind of horror that people must live through for years and years. And like you mentioned, the parole hearings, and it's something that probably never ends for you.
It has, with one of the fellows has finally gotten out. So that took care of that one.
Oh, wow.
And well, it's interesting is I wrote a letter to the two fellows and told them, you know, I can never forgive what you did, but I can't live my life wishing ill on you. And so I forgive you. And so one of the fellows responded and thanked me for it. And then he took the letter to the parole board and was paroled the next hearing.
Wow. And I wonder if they had any degree of remorse over what they had done over time.
I think one of them, did. The other one to this day has never so much as said sorry about that. In fact, he murdered somebody else a week later.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Doctor, this last question, I kind of feel like we've already discussed this, but if there's anything you want to add, where we ask you, it's hard to speak in general terms to all the many sources of grief, and how would you recommend people try to hold on to their faith during the trying times of grief? Is there any, and where is God? We pretty much covered that, but is there anything else you wanted to add to that?
Maybe one last little thing is, I've had a good life. Even with Brad, I've had a good life. But it would have been better, so much better, if Brad had been around to share it with me.
Sure.
I think maybe that's what heaven is all about, that there is, things are going to be made right at some point. And I take a lot of comfort in that. It's, you know, I'm convinced I'm going to see Brad again someday. I don't know what it'd be like, but I'm convinced that I will. And so I think the thing that I would keep in, that I kept in mind and still do, is God said, he said, you know, I made promises, and I'm going to keep looking the book of Hebrews. It said, let us hold unswervingly to the hope we possess, for he who promised is faithful. What has he promised? And he's basically promised heaven, where things are going to be undone, where all the wrong things are going to be made right. And I think that at that point, I will not even think about Brett's death. But what he promised us is that they, for people who are mourning, that they will be comforted. That I'll give them hope in the future, and I'll comfort them. And then the last promise is that, I'm just going to read this, it's the last part of your Bible, but on the last page, God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. He who is sitting on the throne said, I am making everything new. And so I think we can take heart that however wrong things may be, however things should have been different, they're going to be undone, and it's going to be even better than we can ever dream.
And what a hopeful concept that is. You know, when you think about it, it is just overwhelmingly hopeful. And thank you for sharing
that.
Yes,
it's beautiful.
Well, Dr. Dewey touched on this a little bit before the show started. I'd really like to address it since I came up with this statement. often those of you who listen to the show know that when I close out the show, I always say, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And you shared with me your feelings about that. So would you mind to kind of share a little bit about what we talked about before the show along that vein?
Well, just my observation was, is the dark, looking back at the dark times doesn't make them any lighter. They were as dark as I remember. But I think in Christ we have an assurance that the light will come through. The light will shine through. And when it does, it's going to be much brighter than we ever dreamed we could expect when we were back in that dark place. Yeah, I have a happy life now. As I'm a normal person, I'm happy. There's, you know, just the little dark spot about Brad. That's the one thing. But everything else is great.
Thank you for that, Doctor.
Well, Dr. Dew, this has been an absolutely fantastic discussion with you. I know I have thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm sure that Jean has as well. We want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and to share so much for our listeners. So may God bless you, and may God continue to bless you and your wife and in your work with Compassionate Friends and in your life in general. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Listeners, thank you so much for spending time with us today. If you would like to listen to the show again, I'd like to remind you to go to pattysheen.com. That's PattySheene.com. There you will find the Blog Talk Radio tab at the top. You will find links to all of our shows. And also within that, on the more information tabs for each show, you will find links to our guests' contact information. So may God bless you. We hope to have you with us again next week. When you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. God bless you.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a flame.